The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app.
I was driving down the highway and the car in front of me had an 8-foot wide menorah lit for all the world to see. Four young guys in black hats and beards, what a sight. They asked me, "Are you Jewish?" when we pulled up to the light. Eight candles burning, dreidels turning, turning, Hanukkah, the miracle of lights. I asked them, "Where do you all come from? Never saw you in my city." They said, "Don't worry."
Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Finman. We've got a wonderful show for you today. In this half hour of the show, we're going to be having an interview with Dr. Julia Aronoff, who is the director of MDS Drug Detox, a proud sponsor of the Jewish Hour. We're going to be talking about addictions and getting rid of them. Very serious stuff. We've got terrific music for you. Hanukkah's coming up, of course. We open up with a little Hanukkah music. We'll be playing some Hanukkah music in the middle. The portion of the week is the portion of Vayishlach. I think it's about chapter 33 and following in the book of Genesis. I heard a story this last week that totally blew me away. And at the end of the hour, I hope we have time, I'm going to tell you the story. So stay tuned for the end of the hour. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. This week's attempted acts of terrorism included a Palestinian Authority Arab tried to stab a border guard in Bethlehem. The terrorist was shot and killed. A terrorist was shot and killed after he fired a flare gun at Israeli civilians at a hitchhiking stop in Tapuach Junction in Samaria. No Israelis were hurt. And terrorists fired on IDF soldiers and attempted to run one officer down near Modi'in. No injuries were reported in that incident either. Hundreds of buildings in Arab East Jerusalem are scheduled for demolition. These buildings were built without proper permits and may be hazardous. This has been an ongoing point of contention as Arabs build in East Jerusalem without permission. Israel is concerned that the Kinneret will rise above flood levels if the area receives normal rainfall. This is unusual. Usually we report about rains and how the Kinneret is falling. But now they're talking about having to let water out. They have no way of stockpiling this water. There's nowhere for it to go. They let the water out. It goes down the Jordan River into the Dead Sea, and it's gone. Israel's largest reservoir is 15 feet below flood level, and that's not a whole lot if they get really some serious rains and snow melt. PA officials received the reports of Swiss and Russian forensic investigations into the 2004 death of former PA chairman Yasser Arafat, and they're not disclosing the results. 60 samples were taken from Arafat's remains last November to see if he was poisoned by polonium, which is what the charges were. His family refused an autopsy at the time of his death. An expert from Russia's Federal Medical Biological Agency said last month that Arafat could not have died of polonium poisoning. We'll see. Stay tuned. This is disheartening. A bill in the Quebec, or as we say over here, Quebec legislature that would ban the wearing of all overt religious symbols in public offices is now going through. The ban would include, but not limited to, Stars of David, yarmulkes, hijabs, turbans, and crosses. Jewish and Muslim groups are rallying against the bill. Tunisia was suspended from the 2014 Davis Cup tennis tournament after Malek Jaziri, its country's highest-ranked player, was ordered not to compete against Israeli Amir Weintraub. ITF President Francesco Ricci Bitri said, "There is, quote, there is no room for prejudice of any kind in sport or in society. The ITF board decided to send a strong message to the Tunisian tennis team that this kind of action will not be tolerated by any of our members." And finally, did you hear about this one? Art masterpieces seized by the Nazis and thought to have been destroyed in bombings in Germany during World War II were found hidden behind rotting trash in a loner's apartment near Munich. The collection, which includes works by Picasso's, Renoir, Matisse, Marc Chagall, and many others, has an estimated worth of $1.6 billion. that this guy had hanging in his apartment for the last 70 years. Ugh, a brach. Anyway, and that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in the growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We have online Dr. Julie Aronoff, who is the director of MDS Drug Detox. How are you today, Dr. Aronoff?
I'm well. Thank you, Dr. Rabbi Finman.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and thank you for being part of the family of sponsors of the Jewish Hour. Okay, so tell us, your company, your organization, deals with helping people fight drug addiction. So before we talk about fighting, I want to get really very, very basic. What is it about these chemicals that people get addicted to that actually causes them to be addicted, and maybe even define what the word addicted means?
Well, there is a specific definition of addiction. Addiction means that a person depends on the medication to a point where he or she does things that are not within his normal personality. Addiction forms due to taking medication or a drug, meaning either a street drug or a prescription drug, and getting dependent on that medication or drug. Dependence happens gradually because body makes many receptors in the nervous in the central nervous system, so your body actually needs more medication as you take that drug. So with time, the patient needs more and more of that medication to satisfy or to achieve the same amount of pain relief or symptom relief. And it is very difficult to stop taking the medication, and dependence forms. Addiction is, by definition, when the patient becomes not himself, and it affects his work performance. It affects his regular daily routine. They do things that is out of their normal personal usual thing. You know, they buy things on the street. They don't go to work normally. That is addiction. Their social life suffers. Their loved ones leave them or tell them that they will leave them. That is pretty much definition of addiction. But many people are dependent, which is also a bad thing to be, meaning that they cannot live without those medications.
What would be the difference between addiction and dependent, Dr. Aronoff?
Well, dependence is when they have to take the medication in order to function normally. So if they don't take their daily dose or hour, you know, dose every 4 hours or 6 hours, they cannot function normally. They go into withdrawals.
If they can function normal, is that something bad? Like, I'm thinking I'm really dependent on oxygen to, I have to breathe like every like 20 seconds or something like that. I have to take a deep breath, you know, to get.
Actually, you breathe much more often.
Okay. Every 20 times per minute, whatever it is, you know, so I'm really dependent on oxygen. So it's like, and if I don't get it, I really don't function very well. So,
well,
but
we're also dependent on food. We're dependent on oxygen. We're dependent on water. However, our bodies are made to function. We are made to function on those certain things. We need those things to function. Our bodies are not created to function on opiates constantly. We make our own endorphins. Human body produces its own endorphins. That's why we have opiate receptors in our central nervous system. However, exogenous opiates, something that we are prescribed or find on the streets, is not something we're supposed to be functioning on a daily basis. So if you have a broken foot or if you had surgery and you're prescribed narcotics for a week or two, that's one thing to get you over the hump of acute pain. That is one thing. But if you live on those endorphins, your body becomes something different than what it was supposed to be. So that is a dependence. There's a difference between being dependent on food and being dependent on opiates. Mm-hmm. Just like there's a difference between being your body normally, for instance, produces insulin in order to use sugar, correct?
Right.
But a person who does not produce insulin or their body cannot use insulin, like in diabetes type 2, they need to be given an exogenous insulin by shots, right?
Which is a good thing.
That's a good thing. That's a medication. They're dependent on that insulin because their body does not produce insulin.
Okay, so with a dependence, what's happening is that the person's body has gotten used to having so much external endorphins being produced in their brain that they feel that they can't function without it. But they're not going to have necessarily the same withdrawals as a person who's an addict who's wakes up in the morning and sole purpose of living is to acquire that drug. Would that be a quick
assessment?
Actually,
with dependence, you also have withdrawal.
Okay.
There is no difference between the withdrawals of an addict and withdrawals of a dependent person. They still have withdrawals.
Okay. So it doesn't sound like there's really a whole lot different physiologically going on between addiction or a dependency. It's just, the matter of intensity or like the
I think it's a social difference.
Explain.
It's a very thin line.
Mm-hmm.
A dependent person would be somebody who was prescribed medication, who is for pain, for instance, and who is taking it because they need it for that pain. Their body is dependent on opiates because it cannot function without those opiates now, and it would go into withdrawals if those opiates were not given it.
Okay, understood. Now, so let me just, I'm thinking that person who is addicted to heroin.
Right.
There is a prescription for them to be taken off of heroin and they're put on methadone.
Correct.
So now what's happened is they're not addicted to heroin anymore. They're now addicted to methadone. And the
Correct.
Purpose of being addicted to the methadone is that they can function on the methadone, but they're still addicted to the methadone.
Exactly.
They wouldn't be called dependent on it.
They are addicted to methadone. You're absolutely correct. There are two medications now on FDA-approved list that are called opiate maintenance therapy. They are considered treatment for addiction. However, they're not true treatment for addiction. What they are, in effect, is a substitution treatment. You substitute one opiate for another opiate. So your receptors are satisfied, they are filled with an opiate, methadone does not give you as much of a high as a heroin does. It is a long-lasting opiate, so you don't need to take it as often. Usually an addict goes to a methadone clinic once a day, gets their dose, so they're controlled. They do function better, however, they're still very addicted. They're tied to that clinic. They cannot travel. They cannot do any business outside wherever they're going, and they're definitely still an addict. Methadone has myriad of adverse effects. And the other medication of the same sort is Suboxone. It is an oral, either pill or a strip that they dissolve on their tongue. It has the same sort of effect. It's an agonist-antagonist medication that is exactly the same, has a effect on opiate receptors. So it's an opiate itself. It's extremely difficult to get off of. So even though they sometimes are promised as a treatment for addiction, and they're supposed to be a tapering method, meaning that they taper off of Suboxone, most people stay on it for many, many years and have very difficult time getting off, if ever.
Okay, let me just now, we've been talking about opiates, but there are other chemical addictions and dependencies that we hear about, like, for example, cocaine and its derivatives, crack, et cetera, methamphetamines, and et cetera. But those are like put into a different category. Why so, Dr. Julie Aronoff?
Well, those medications like methamphetamine, cocaine, pot, there are other myriad of medication, narcotics, such as
drugs
that are called narcotics, drugs. The newer ones called spice. There are myriads and myriads of street drugs that are now available. They do affect the brain in many ways. Some of them are psychologically addictive because of that effect, meaning people want more. They want the high, especially the methamphetamine-like drugs, meaning cocaine, speed. What they do is they cause a high kind of a reaction. They make a person believe they can do everything better or faster.
Mm-hmm. But those drugs don't set off like the endorphin rush that, say, like the narcotics do. It's another process by where I've never done any of that stuff.
No.
I don't know. But people have told me that the first time that they did meth, they got such a, like, exhilarating jolt, and their brain just like became like they felt like every synapse in their brain was firing.
Right.
And that was what they were looking for, because the next time they did it, it was like the law of diminishing returns. It was less, and so it took more to try and get to that and to get more. So it's not, would you still call that addiction?
It's a psychological addiction. It's not a physiological addiction. There is no true withdrawal from it. Once they get used to doing it, they feel tired fatigued, depressed if they don't do it, because they feel like they can't do anything without it. They feel empowered when they do those kind of drugs, and they feel tired and depressed without them. But there's no physical withdrawal from those drugs, so they don't need medical help getting off of them, other than maybe, you know, psychological help. But
okay.
That's not one of our services, because they don't need physical, physiological, medical help getting off of those drugs. They do need support, emotional support and psychological support to get off those drugs, because they are very they're very psychologically addictive because of the amazing high that they get from them.
Okay, let's talk about this now. Okay, so MDS drug detox. You have a person who is addicted to some sort of an opiate, who has had an epiphany that they don't want to be addicted anymore. So they come to you, they come to your clinic to get help. What do you, Dr. Julie Aronoff, do at MDS drug detox for that person?
Well, we address specifically the physiological part of addiction. Me and my partner, Dr. Joseph George, are a team that really addresses the medical part of the addiction. We take care of the addiction under deep sedation, you might call it anesthesia, and we precipitate withdrawal while the patient is asleep. So the acute phase of withdrawal, which is very, very difficult for the opiate user, happens while they are under deep sedation.
Okay, so basically you're putting the person to sleep so they don't feel that they have the DTs.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not the DTs. DTs is something associated with alcohol.
Okay.
Opiate withdrawal is extremely uncomfortable. It is not dangerous as alcohol withdrawal to the body, because opiate withdrawal usually does not cause seizures like alcohol, like you mentioned, DTs. Opiate withdrawal is just incredibly, incredibly painful on the body, and usually people cannot go through them. Usually most people do stop and go back to using. Opiate withdrawal usually takes anywhere from a week to several weeks, depending on the opiate patient's trying to get off of. Even while tapering, opiates withdrawal still occur. And they're like a very, very, very bad case of flu. If you ever had a bad flu, multiplied by 10, the body aches, the shivers, the restless leg, the creepy crawlies, the pains everywhere, they sneezing, coughing. They're just a really, really bad flu that you can only imagine. And the pain is so bad during the withdrawal that most people cannot withstand it.
Okay, so you're saying this process could take a week or two?
It can take, depending on what they're getting off of, the longer lasting opiates can take more than several weeks.
So do you have these people sedated for
several
weeks?
No, what we do is we precipitate withdrawal. So we precipitate it with medications, and we pre-medicate them. The opiates also cause intestinal issues, such as constipation. So any withdrawal from opiates also causes a severe diarrhea and nausea. So that's also one of the worst things that happens. So people really can't stand it, so they start taking opiates again. So we pre-medicate our patients to minimize the symptoms, and we precipitate withdrawals under anesthesia or deep sedation.
Okay, and how long are they asleep
for?
They
really go through withdrawals within 4 to 6 hours, and they're asleep probably for 6 to 8 maybe during that day.
That's it?
That's it. By the time they leave our clinic, they are tired. They may have a little restless leg, maybe a little uncomfortable, but they're pretty good. And we keep them with us for about 3 days. We watch them. We make sure they're comfortable. We give them medications to control whatever residual symptoms they may have, and then if they do the procedure on Wednesday, they're usually able to leave us Friday or Saturday.
Wow, that's pretty phenomenal.
Yes.
Addiction comes with a whole package there may be underlying reasons. I mean, me growing up, we refer to addicts as self-medicators. Everybody had like a problem that they couldn't deal with, and so they turned to this medication to cover up the pain of whatever it was. Once now we take off that artificial cover, so now it's just the process of becoming not an addict begins.
Absolutely.
What have you given them to be able to handle that, Dr. Julia Arnoff?
I'm so glad you asked that question, because you hit it right on the nail. Most addicts, many addicts, are self-medicators. And the reason they become dependent or addicted on their opiates is because they started taking it to quell some pain that they're having. And most of the time, the pain is not physical, it is emotional. Whether they were traumatized as children or as young adults, something happened in their past that to cause that. Or maybe the pain that they were medicated brought out something else that they liked, the feeling that they were getting from the medication that also helped to deal with whatever other pain they had from the past, and they kept taking the medication. But also very often these are people who had surgery and they are genetically predisposed to have a certain high from the opiates that other people do not. And we can't forget that genetic predisposition, because there are a certain subset of people who are genetically predisposed to become dependent on opiates, which most of us are not so predisposed. So we have these two groups of people. Some of them have the psychological need for these medications, and some of them are genetically predisposed to get dependent on them. So who does better without treatment? Well, I think those who are genetically predisposed do a little better. And how do we deal with that? What we do is we suggest that we insist that everybody gets a pellet of naltrexone. Naltrexone is a very strong opiate blocker. It works on a cellular level. It goes to those opiate receptors in the central nervous system, and it sits on those opiate receptors, and it blocks them. So not only does it prevent from any opiate from occupying those opiate receptors, but it resets the brain to say to it, I don't want any opiates anymore, and remove any extra opiate receptors that you've made, because I'm not going to be using them. So it also prevents psychological craving from opiates as well. So we put an implant in that lasts for 2 months, and we also set them up if they agree on a injectable form of opiate blocker, the same one, naltrexone, called Vivitrol, which is an FDA-approved treatment for addiction. It's an injectable form of naltrexone, Vivitrol, and it's given once a month, and they can get it wherever they come from. So their hometown physician can administer it for them. It's usually covered by their insurance. The problem with that is that once it is covered by insurance, it's not confidential anymore. So the underwriters already know that they're treated for either addiction or alcoholism, because it's approved for both. They can pay out of pocket for it, but it's rather expensive. They can take naltrexone by mouth as a pill. It works very well as well. So it's a non-narcotic way to prevent any opiates from ever affecting them. And we like them to be on it for at least a year. It works for both people who are affected because of the genetic issue, or for those who are affected psychologically. But for those who have a psychological issue, from those who are self-medicating, as you said, we really do recommend that they find some kind of therapy. treat whatever the underlying issue is. Anxiety, pain, depression, something that needs to, that caused them to use to begin with, has to be addressed.
Okay, understood. Our guest, if you're just tuning in, is Dr. Julian Aronoff. She is the director of MDS Drug Detox. What happens, we were talking about opiate addiction, what happens if somebody who's addicted to methamphetamine or cocaine or alcohol or even tobacco come to you and were to go undergo this process? Would it have the same effect?
Well, alcohol, as we said, needs to be detoxed in the hospital. Alcohol is a very severe addiction. Withdrawal from it is very dangerous. Acute intoxication of alcohol is very dangerous, and withdrawal has to be done in the hospital setting. We do not do that. Naltrexone, though, will work for alcohol addiction, and Vivitrol injection is extremely helpful with alcohol addiction. And whoever is interested in that can go on Vivitrol.com and find a physician who provides those injections. And my partner, Dr. George, does provide them in his office.
Okay.
Other ones, as you said, methamphetamine or cocaine will not, we don't do treatments like that because I don't believe they need withdrawal treatment because they don't have physical withdrawals. And it is different receptors in the brain that are in charge of those drugs, and it is not opiate receptors, so our naltrexone will not help them.
So a person who's an addicted to meth, just because they didn't do it for, say, 4 days, they're going to still be as addicted as they were 4 days before.
As I said, it's a psychological addiction. Methamphetamine is something they can just stop. It is difficult because what they will do is they will go through a fatigue state. They will feel depressed, and they will feel like they don't want to get out of bed because they won't feel empowered to do anything. But really, it's a psychological state. It's not a physical state.
Okay, we'll leave that for another time. Okay.
Okay.
Tell us now. People know somebody or have a problem themselves, and they want to get in touch with the people at MDS Drug Detox. How do they go about doing that, Dr. Julie Aronoff?
Well, they can certainly go onto our website,
which
and
is?
It's MDSDrugDetox.com. Or they can call us, and our phone is easy to remember. It's 888-MDS-NU. Or, hold on, I have to find it. It's not so simple.
Yeah, it was MDSDrugDetox.com, and the phone number was 800?
No, it's 888.
888. MDS.
MU. Or 888-637-6968.
Okay. New you.
And we have somebody there available all the time, anytime, 365 days a year.
So if somebody in at 3 o'clock in the morning says, I really got to stop doing this, I'm making the call to MDS Drug Detox.
Absolutely. You can call us anytime, and we will give you all the information. But the website, MDSDrugDetox.com, gives you a lot of information. It tells you everything about us.
Okay, terrific.
It even has our pictures there.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, that's going to do it for us, and we're going to thank you so much for taking time and telling us about it. We wish you continued success.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Do you or someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS drug detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox. Hey, Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We got time now for some music. This is Avram Fried doing a song called Menorah. And guess what it's about? It's about the menorah.
Osinu lecho menoyro bimei moishe. Oy yo 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 ve koveso Osinu lecho menoyro bimei shloime. Oy yo 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 ve koveso
Osinu lecho
of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Some things are better the way they used to be, like the crisp feel of a cool autumn day, the serenity of a baby sleeping, or the feeling of coming home after a long trip. Franklin Cider Mills makes cider the way cider is supposed to be, Its old-fashioned clear crisp taste reminds you of a cool autumn day. Located in the heart of historic Franklin Village at 14 Mile and Franklin Road, Franklin Cider Mill has been making cider the same way for over a century. Always fresh, with no additives or preservatives. You just can't buy Franklin Cider in any supermarket. Franklin Cider Mill is open from Labor Day weekend to after Thanksgiving from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Come visit Franklin Cider Mill. It's kind of like coming home.
Herschel Finman here. You're listening to the Jewish Hour. We got some public service announcements. Let's see what we got over here going. Let's see. Sunday, November the 17th. That's the next week. The Cohen Haddow Center for Judaic Studies presents the debate over the name of the Jewish state. This is at Adat Shalom in Farmington Hills, also co-sponsored by Stand With Us. It's at 2 p.m. at Adat Shalom. Let's see, what's this one? The Golden Dream, the Jewish Journey from Europe to America, a symposium on Jewish immigration. It's a whole symposium. This is Sunday, December the 8th, and this is at the Adat Shalom again, and it starts at 12:45 and is over at 5 p.m. For more information, you can go to jewishdetroit.org. This is sponsored by 15 organizations, jewishdetroit.org/golden dream to register for that. And we've got one more. This is a save the date. Here we go. Yad Ezra, they're the people who feed hungry people, presents One Day Vanish Hunger. Let's save the date. Join Yad Ezra on March the 27th at 7 p.m. in the Royal Oak Music Theater for a concert with famed reggae Jewish rapper Matis Yahu. For more information, go to vanishhunger2014.evenbright.com. I don't know what Evenbright is, but that's what it is. vanishhunger2014.evenbright.com. Your organization having a function that would like to be publicized, send it to rabbifinman.com, and we'll put it up right here.
We got for you some Yiddish music coming up right now. This is the famous Mickey Katz singing Rock Around the Clock. Let's listen.
Join me, hon. We'll function on when the clock strikes one. We're gonna rock a room, the clock by now. Rocking and backing is to get down. Gonna rock in a room, the clock tonight. And when the clock claps, zwei und drei und vier, the music brennt, oh, your club to me. We're gonna rock a room, the clock the knock. We're gonna rock and rock. Till we're to plots, gonna rock and rock. A room, the clock tonight. Ring finna fun, sex and sieben. We'll press our knees chock full of grieving. Gonna rock until we're always gematter. Gonna hold you until we're all fat chatter. We're gay rockin' and back in our room. The clock tonight. Now when it's at 9:10 and 11 now, to brochen the beiner and you gettin' schwab. Gotta make a lechayim, a glass of wine. Yay, many shevets, sweet Edelstein. Gonna rock and knock around the clock tonight. Leg mir zurück dort auf den Schelf. Mein Kisch gespatscht, mein Fiete heut. Du bist geracket am Omos teut. Du racken am Backen herum, die Klack tonight.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurance is accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week is the portion of Vayishlach. It is found in chapter 32, verse 4 and following, and discusses the encounter that Jacob had with Esav on his return to the country of Canaan at that time, and all the various ensuing incidences that happened afterwards. So, and I strongly suggest you take a look at it. I'm going to zoom right in at the beginning of the portion. The beginning of the portion, it says that Yaakov sent messengers to Esav. And the word for messengers, a couple ways of saying messenger in Hebrew. The word here is malachim, and it appears probably the most common biblical term for messenger. In modern Hebrew, you would say shluchim, from the word shlach, meaning to send. You send a messenger. Malachim are sort of like agents for the king, having the same etymological root as the word melech, meaning king. So Rashi comments that he sent malachim mamish, which means that he didn't send messengers, he sent angels. And it's a very interesting thing that Jacob had at his beck and call angels. Listen, go to Esav and tell him that I'm coming and we're going to settle the land together and the allegories that are there. I've done my part in purifying the world. I'm ready for the messianic era, and I'm assuming you have too, because it's been 22 years since we last saw each other. This message is conveyed that way. The simple reason why did he send malachim, angels, is because he was afraid if he sends any human being, that the human being would have to endure the tortures of his evil brother, Esav, as we talked about last week, the good and evil that which is portrayed by Jacob and Esav. What do we learn from this statement that he sent Malachim Mamish? It says, Maisa Avois Simen Labanim, that which happened to the patriarchs is an indication as to what could happen with their progeny, meaning us. Yaakov had at his disposal extra-dimensional beings. These were entities which were not limited to three dimensions in time. We, as a Jewish people, have a unique connection with the Almighty. And our ability to traverse the world is beyond the limitations of time and place. This last week we commemorated, the 75th anniversary of Kristallnacht. I believe it was the 9th of November and 1938, when the pogrom, this orgy of violence, as it was called, was perpetrated against the Jews of Germany. Tens of people lost their lives. Millions of dollars of Jewish property was destroyed, and it really marked the onset of the Holocaust. The this ability for the Jews to survive and overcome such adversity, to have survived the Holocaust, where now they're saying it's not 6 million people that were killed. It's maybe 8 or 9 or even 10 million Jews who were killed during the Holocaust. And to be resilient and to survive to such an extent that, for example, in 2013, there were 13 Nobel Prize laureates, of whom 10 were Jewish. That's a pretty good percentage. I hope that the leader of the Nazi Party, may his name be obliterated, is wherever his ashes and remains, whatever it is or remains, are just like rolling at the fact that this quote-unquote subhuman species that he wanted to eradicate from the world is actually doing quite well and is quite successful. Why is that? It's because we can take a lesson from our patriarch Jacob that we don't have to be limited by three dimensions. We have an ability to tap into beyond what limitations of the world there are. We do this, and there you see what Jacob had to do. Jacob had to be an ish tam. He had to be a simple person. No complexities, as the expression is in Yiddish, on chochmas, without any types of tricks or trying to beat around the bush, just to relate as a simple person on without complications, that what needs to be done, Torah and mitzvahs. That's the way that we've survived. Speaking of surviving, we got to take a quick commercial break. We're running out of time really fast. Don't go away for the Jewish story. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep The Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to The Jewish Hour. Want to get in touch with me? The best way? RabbiFinman.com, www.RabbiFinman.com. What will you find there? Well, you'll be able to find right on the homepage, you find a contact link. You'll be able to contact me. I contact you when everybody lives happily ever after. You'll also find archived editions of the show, something you didn't hear this week, want to catch up again. Maybe you forgot something from last week that you heard, want to get reminded. Maybe a month ago you didn't make it to hear the Jewish Hour. Well, it's all there right on RabbiFinman.com. What else will you find? You'll find archived editions of the E-Parsha, the U-Parsha, and the Hasidic U-Story, which are various media of yours truly conveying, hopefully entertaining and insightful insights into the portion of the week in Jewish holidays, and the all very, very important donations page. The Jewish Hour at this point is listener-supported like you for the most part. We do have our family of sponsors, which we thank very, very much. The people at MDS Drug Detox, Dr. Julie Aronoff, of course. Franklin Cider, the Michigan Kosher, the Art Studio, and Compass Healthcare. They help, and they help in a big way. But you help even in a bigger way. Listener-supported. That means you. That means go to the computer, go to RabbiFinman.com, go to the donations page, click on a number, give the information. It's all safe. It's secure. It's a 503C corporation. So it's tax deductible. It's a charitable institution. So God says, okay, we'll count that towards your gifts of charity. Do it today. It's November. We haven't paid November yet. The piper is piping. We're staving him off. We're waiting for you. So go today and do it. Don't like using computers for donations? I understand. We actually get a lot of paper donations. Yes, thank you very much. They're sent to the Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Quick Hasidic story. There was a person by the name of Gavriel Rotenberg, who used to live in Crown Heights in the 1950s. He was a Gerer Chassid. It's a group of Hasidim that originated from the city of Gur in Poland, outside of Warsaw. Being that he lived in Crown Heights in the 50s, so the prominent rabbi that was living in Crown Heights in the 1950s was the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he used to go visit the Lubavitcher Rebbe quite often, and even in the course of his lifetime, over the course of 40 years, received over 100 correspondence with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I received maybe a half a dozen, maybe 10, in the course from 1976 to 1992. He wouldn't take money. He would never borrow money, this guy. And it happened that he had a wedding. And he didn't have any money for it. And by this time, he had moved to Israel. It was like the late 1970s. The day of his wedding, he was dressed to go. Didn't even have money for a cab to get his family to the hall. He went to the synagogue to pray the afternoon prayers and said, God will take care. Somebody walked in by the name of Yaroslavsky, looked around and said, you're making a wedding today, right? He said, yeah. And he said, I bet you need money. And he said, yeah. He says, I was with the Lubavitcher Rebbe yesterday. And he said, when you go back to Israel tomorrow, find a Jew who's making a wedding and needs money. And give this to him. And this was the connection. He never wrote to the Rebbe that he needed money. That's going to do it for us. I hope you had a chance to entertain you a bit. I hope you had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope you have a great week. And we hope to see you again back again next week. Take care.